You're listening to episode 10 of the Where Are Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded March 30th, 2010. Episode, Evan and I speak quite extensively about two different subjects. The first topic we go into is the game I ran at GameStorm, a local game convention that features board gaming and story gaming. The second topic is the issue of holding space for a regular conversation. And there's so many issues around this that we spend quite a bit of time exploring, as many as we can. So without further ado, here's Evan.
So Willem was just about to tell me about, oh yeah, I ran this really great game. And I said, hey, let's grab the mic. So you ran a really great game?
Yes.
Where?
At GameStorm 12, a yearly gaming convention that has like board games and role-playing games, and then this little sub-convention called the Indie Hurricane, which I participate in with some friends of mine who are into story gaming, telling stories with games. And so what I thought would be cool was to demonstrate how easily one can learn complex rule sets for story gaming, because story games are still much like traditional role-playing games, tabletop role-playing games, pen and paper role-playing games, where there is thick rule books and a lot of technical information to know, and there's people are reluctant to learn new games because they're so associate the tremendous learning curve that they're going to have to go through with learning new games. Like, think Dungeons and Dragons, basically, and like books and books, stacks of books, right? Well, some of the indie games coming out, the indie story games, are getting more and more what they call rules light. But still, there's this ongoing problem that even a very simple card game, you still need to learn it somehow, and it can be sort of confusing. And we've always experienced those moments, you know, where it's like, oh, wait, I thought, your turn. So it's like the teaching of a card game or any game and the playing of it are inextricable. The enjoyment of a card game must involve the learning of it. Mm. And that's sort of my thesis. And it's really no different than the learning of a language. The speaking of a language must be enjoyable and involve the how you learn it, right? Those have to be the same thing.
Like the rules of the language must be born out of the playing of the language.
Right. A language is a very technical skill set. It's, no different than like a computer operating language or, I mean, anything, you know, mm-hmm. It's like, it's very technical. So what I did was I ran a demonstration game like we like to do.
Yep.
And we had like, myself, we had Joel Shempert who blogs at Story by the Throat,
who has attended a 2-day workshop.
Yes. He's a workshop veteran. And actually, he just designed a game called The Dreaming Crucible, which is about resolving teenage angst through travels in fairy, basically. So it's meant to create fiction like Labyrinth, Mirror Mask, books by Maurice Sendak. Pretty cool, actually. And it's all designed according to this this idea of fluency play. How do we make learning this game an effortless, graceful experience so that we can also enjoy it and not be able to differentiate between the learning of the game and the playing of the game. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So nice. he was helping out there, and we had Nick, who's also a game designer. He co-designed Sea Dracula. And Classroom Deathmatch, and I think one or two other games with his brother Jake Richmond.
So have you ever played Where Your Keys before?
No. So at this game, the only person who'd played was Joel and myself. Mm-hmm. That there was Nick, Jim Chokey, Laura, I don't remember her last name, and Corey. And actually, Laura is a she helps homeschool kids out, like in 1 hour sessions with like dyslexia and writing and does all math and So she's
floating homeschool.
Exactly, exactly. So I mean, I did my little speech of about like really our the people who love us the most are kindergarten teachers, Montessori teachers, and ESL teachers seem to really get what we're doing. But other teachers seem, you know, there's a little more of like, you, I fear you. you signify change, you know, and it's like, you know, the tremendous pressures of institutional life, I really can't blame them. But so the people who get around that are those three classes. And it turns out that Laura is sort of fits in a funny way into a couple of those, you know, just, you know,
she's kind of coasting the lines.
Yeah. Like, you know, so it's
dabbling in each.
Definitely funny that, you know, she showed up. And so we ran a pretty strong game.
How many people? Just the five of you then?
Yes. The five and five of those people. And I was running.
Nice.
Yeah. And everybody was there the whole time.
How many inner circles did you do?
Well, here's the funny thing. Here's what I did. I was like, okay, you know what? We need a pretty solid lunatic fringe. So what I did, and actually Laura wasn't there in the beginning. She was like somebody who was like watching, and then we had her sit down. So she was like a passerby, which is kind of a nice thing. And so we had three chairs were the inner circle. In a triangle pattern, and then we had three angels on the shoulder.
Nice.
So, and you know, I actually gave a very lengthy introduction. Oh yeah, it was chunky.
You?
Yes, me.
Why?
Okay.
Why, man?
This is why. It really was calibration to audience, right? So, geeks, right?
Sure.
I'm a geek. You're a geek, and these are geeks, right? Uh-huh. And so, like, the geek trap is to get into talking about why what you're doing and the abstract nature of what you're doing and why do you do it? Because you're a geek. Right. Well, when you finally play a game with geeks, all right, man, then you like talk about it, right? And I mean, they were eating it up, and I was like, I only addressed what I absolutely had to address to get them a big picture of what we were doing. So, like, you
Give
know,
the big points.
Well, so like basically what they needed to know and what I addressed was what is sort of the larger roadmap of where we're going and why. Geeks like that.
Yeah.
And then also the constant marking of techniques feeds that sort of, but I learn by the tiny details, right? So, and I think that's the strength of introducing where your keys is, that even when you're just introducing the game,
you're
marking, and right now I'm like marking a technique with my hand, you know, in front of the microphone. Always useful, you know. But so if you're doing
I'm out of a habit, just sort of copycatting.
Yeah, and Evan's copycatting me, and so that's what I had them do, and so they're already playing. I mean, you know, obviously we walk our talk, so the imitation, the copycat of the game has already begun, and then I'm just like pulling in, like, you know. So basically, danger with geeks. And this is why I had to mention Sorry Charlie, and I had to mention We'll All Get There Together.
Nice.
Which means I have to mention Travels with Charlie.
Yep. And so, if you're in that speech, you're already, you've got to be, you know, you have a 4-minute, 5-minute introduction anyway.
And so why did I have to mention that? Well, because in geek culture, there can be a very competitive streak. You know, not only competitive in the sense of, like, I want to learn more faster and then be able to use these rules to excel, you know, and to show my excellence, right? Which is wonderful, and in the context it works.
Right.
But also, like, that person over there is slowing us down. You know, like, really smart geeks, and this is a smart crowd, can, like, feel like they're being held back by the slow person in the
classroom.
Sort of
a survivor kind of a attitude starts to be born.
Exactly.
Bit.
I mean, this is all classic training from the classroom. You know, like,
So in front of the class by knocking off somebody else in front of you.
Exactly, you know.
Or
so
bringing their downfalls to light.
Yeah. So what I had to do was communicate them to that. Everybody was an asset, and they were an asset to everybody, you know? And so that means We'll All Get There Together. Right. Also, the hungry geek mind needs Sorry Charlie, right away.
They do.
You know? Yeah. So I addressed Sorry Charlie. Then, How Fascinating. And that's, of course, one I'd probably do anyway.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
And then, Cycle Full. I talked about full.
Nice.
It was funny though. Like I have this. It felt like it took longer than. And then I had to do Lunatic Fringe and Angel on the Shoulder and Inner Circle, right? And then we had, since we were in a funny kind of, it really took more attention to placement of the Angels on the Shoulder and the Lunatic Fringe.
Because of the three.
Because of the three right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it was cool because we had like equal Lunatic Fringe to Inner Circle, mm-hmm. but it really, they had to be in just the right spot. They had to be able to see me and see their person. And it was very easy for them to get blocked from seeing me.
Right.
So we set that all up. We went in and then we finally, you know, Copycat was in there and we started playing. And the other, geek problem is that, especially at a gaming convention, you know that whole work hard, play hard thing?
Yeah.
Well, geek culture has a version of that too, right? Okay. So these are people who are like, you know, really smart folks and using their brains to the max, like when they're working, right?
Right.
And then when they want to play, oh man, they're like packed sessions and one after another, and they're like been up all night or, you know, or they're going to run something next right after this game they're playing. And so these people were like fairly tapped, like when they sat down. I mean, I could tell, I could tell Joel was tapped.
Sure.
Jim was,
what time was it?
3 p.m. Okay, sure. So deep in the afternoon siesta time.
deep in the siesta.
Let's learn. Jim was pretty tapped. Laura was seemed like she might have been playing all morning, you know. I would say Corey looked pretty perky.
Male or female?
Male.
Okay.
Corey looked like he was pretty perky. And
how were you?
I was good. Okay. I mean, this is the first thing I'd done that day, so I'm there's one other thing. They gave me a large conference table, and so I had brought the little, the small portable table and the blue tablecloth.
Great.
And so explaining, that was actually, that some came in the end explaining why I did that.
Right, right.
But that was a cool moment. So anyway, we started playing, and also there's another geek thing. the other geek thing is use of the body. Geeks are not necessarily like performance artists,
not such the theater crowd.
Yeah, so we're, to the extent that they were story gaming nuts, that I was lucky, you know, that we had an edge. But to the extent that this was a game, a kinesthetic game of use of the body to communicate, that was definitely, we were building some skills that they may not have possessed that much.
Which can tap a little extra bandwidth.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Deep into Siestaville.
Yeah, and it did. Yeah. It definitely did. But what we did was we had Laura was the first one to call full, and then Jim was the second one to call full, and they definitely needed it, and they definitely probably held on a little longer, but I don't think because they were embarrassed. It was because they were committed to the game. Mm. They were enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody really enjoyed themselves.
Great.
We got all the way to want, have, give, take, and we like want, have, give, take.
Good.
All four.
Taken, given.
What do you have? Take it. Take good. What I have. Who has sweet. What? You want what I, you know.
Yeah.
And they, there's a funny
thing. Cycling through at that point, cycling full.
Mm-hmm.
So you had three, what three props do you have?
I had a dollar.
Uh-huh.
I had a red pen.
Uh-huh.
And I had a black pen.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
And if we had four chairs, I had a white rock.
Uh-huh.
And I did that on purpose. Like, for example, I could have easily done a stick.
Sure.
A white rock. A dollar and
whatever.
Right. You know, that's not true at all. I had another dollar.
Oh.
Yeah. I was going to do $2,
uh-huh.
a red pen and a black pen.
Oh.
I was thinking, and then a fifth would have been a white rock.
Uh-huh. Are you trying to tie it into the Squamish thing to see so that people can have a better idea?
No. 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 So my call, this is just my sort of gut feeling, was that if I could make the game as technical as possible, uh-huh. I would. So three colors, going all the way with three colors.
Sure. Nice.
But I was only going to do that at five objects. At four objects, I wanted $2 because I knew that a geek crowd would like get a kick out of going, I have $2.
Right.
So we would have like the maximum sort of technical wrinkles for that amount of, like, I knew there was going to be some geek who was going to steal it all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then we only had three people. So I never got to
Didn't get to steal quite.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. We never really.
But
we never
the heck out of one. Go take.
Yeah, and they were right. tapped. They weren't going to do steal.
How long did you go?
I didn't keep. I had Joel was my timekeeper, and then you know.
So you didn't keep track of time?
No, exactly.
Find a different timekeeper.
Yeah, exactly.
Joel, as a timekeeper, you're officially fired.
Yeah.
You'll never work as a timekeeper in this town again.
but I would say it was probably about a half hour. I mean, it was pretty standard.
Yeah.
Pretty standard amount of time.
With a, what would you say, a 10-minute intro?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Nice. And there was lots of road. There were lots of. I never actually called Inner Circle full again after. I did 6 Inner Circle fulls from the get go.
Nice.
3 just standard, and then there was a comfy chair on the other side of the room, so I did. Now one of you rotate out to the comfy chair 10 feet away.
Great.
And so we just. They had did full.
Great.
And so they used full really well.
Right.
How fascinating was used pretty well.
Great. Did you do the how fascinating, all positive and the negative moments?
Yes.
Okay, great. And I say those lightly.
Yeah, yeah, right,
positive,
right.
Positive, negatives, learning moments.
I definitely introed it that way. I don't know if I was totally rigorous about. I might have. I don't have a clear memory of that.
Mm.
I don't have a clear memory.
Which part of it don't you have a clear memory?
Whether or not, like, say, when the total physical response moment, when the dollar changed hands, and I'm like, how fascinating. I don't... What I did was I was like, this is a big moment, and I talked about it, and I don't think I went all the way to like, and also how fascinating, or beginning it with how fascinating and explaining why, you know.
Right.
So I think I have some personal practice to do with making sure that I start using how fascinating more and more with the little milestone moments rather than just with mistakes.
You know, up at the game in Seattle that we played the other day, that was a real big, I actually forgot all about doing that on those really big positive moments. And what's his name? Topher.
Yeah.
Did
picked it up.
And he, and I was like, oh, thank you. Because that for the rest of the game, he was the successful moment, how fascinating.
Oh, wow.
So that really did help out.
That's amazing. And you introed it that way? Did you explain it to him, or did he just gut instinct it?
No, he gut instincted it.
Well, I'll be damned.
Yeah, because I didn't actually remember that part of it. Or did I? Did I remember? Yeah, we're going to how fascinating. Oh, you know, I did. I mentioned it. I did mention.
Kind of, okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
I did mention.
Because I was going to be very impressed with Topher. I still am, but I mean, that's a psychic moment.
No, I did mention it because I was like, you know, we're going to do this thing. How fascinating when we have a feeling of a negative moment, but to make sure that we're not pegging this activity on just the negatives, we're also going to do it on the very positive moments.
Yeah.
So at the first positive moment, though, it was clearly a positive moment. I was like, yay! And then he was like, how about now? Is now this moment time for the how? And so he just kind of looked at me real quick and was like, yeah, how fascinating. Because I saw how he was about to say.
Yeah, exactly. And so it looked like
how
he probably has no idea.
He probably doesn't. Now you know, it's over.
That's part of the skills.
Yeah.
So we went all the way, and then I had my they were
a gelatinous ooze.
They were like bean bags set on chairs. You know, they weren't going anywhere. the game was over, and I was looking around, and everybody was just kind of sitting there.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I kind of have a captive audience for a while. Like, they're not going anywhere. And so what I started this sort of spiel. And Joel was still perky enough that he was like, he wanted to talk about his game and like how it applied to the game. Cause we didn't actually get to that before. Yeah, yeah. So we got, while people just sort of recuperated, we got to like sort of discuss some things about, you know, those issues and like what applications, and yes, this is for language. Nick is actually taking an ASL.
Oh, nice.
Class at college.
How do you do? Did it blow his mind?
Well, he's going to take it.
Oh.
He signed up to take it. And I was like, dude, you probably just
you did weeks 1, 2, and 3 in the last,
and I think
30
4,
minutes.
5, and 6.
It's quite possible.
I think if he like
dramatically,
you know what I mean? Like he's pretty much passed his class at this point. And I told him about the cheat, the test, the ACTful test, round two, all that.
Yeah.
So
same conversation kind of stuff.
Yeah. Then they, you know, they love that kind of, you know, hacks.
Oh, of course.
Cheats and hacks. You know, and so. So it was just, it was really good. Like everybody was like, wow, this was great. And they, Laura was going to refer a friend who's a Chinese
ESL teacher, perfect. I guess.
Wow.
To our website, and they were all like, "Where is the website? What's the I went out and them."
Great.
I did notice, you know, one thing in terms of obviously, I didn't have physical artifacts to hand out to help people take the next step and get to the videos on our website. I didn't have business cards, like a brochure, a flyer, like I had nothing. So what they would have to have.
Right, we need to get you business cards with those logos and that little.
Well, and you know, like. And maybe like a couple, you know, like there's also like sort of for dances or events, there's like those larger size cards where, you know, that we could like have in a stack on Chinook night. I'm like,
right, you know
what I mean?
And house party flyers.
House party flyers, you know, like, but they're like card stock and glossy. Sure. I think there's like, whoa, here's the other thing though.
Whoa.
There you go. Oh, okay. So anyway, so that was the game.
Okay, nice.
Did you have any other questions about the game?
How did Joel do during it? Did you let him lead? Did he try to lead? Was he a fantastic lunatic fringe? How do you think the workshop that he attended helped him, you know, run this game, facilitate this game, make this game better because he was there? At the workshop, and then again at this.
For Joel, where Joel is at with the game. I think he did really well. Like we've had discussions with Joel where he's talked about how he doesn't normally make like extended eye contact with people in a especially being a story gamer, he goes into an inner world and is telling a story from dwelling inside him, and he's not necessarily seeing his audience.
Right.
And so knowing that he was still hardcore working on that skill, he actually did quite well.
Great.
Like he was like he was where I needed him. There was one funny moment. Well, actually, there's several funny moments. That and it was the same thing several times in a row. And both Jim and Joel did the same thing. Okay, so you know when you're normally playing a game and you're like who wants Joel's pen?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And then Jim go, you know, or whoever it is, but this case, Jim goes and starts sort of point at them and they're about to do and then so I was like about to jump in,
right?
And Joel's just like firing off, right?
Wait, what's he firing off?
He's firing. Oh, I give you my, you know, I give you. You want my pen? I give you. I mean, you know,
right. And instead of pulling him through it, and he jumped ahead and was.
Well,
like,
and it's not, and it wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but what I noticed was neither Jim nor Joel could see me, right? Mm-hmm. And as sort of the most fluent person in the game, and I was sitting right there,
right?
But you know, like their peripheral vision was gone, so there was all like. They were tunnel visioned on each other, and they actually couldn't see me, so I couldn't help. So if Joel was going down the wrong track, which actually he didn't, it worked fine.
Right.
But if he had, I wouldn't have been able to do anything about it. And then for Jim,
to ensure success,
you know,
it made it difficult to.
So it was funny, and that happened a few times where I was like, well. I'm kind of a fifth wheel in this conversation between them, but it's still working out fine.
Uh-huh.
But it's an interesting, like it's something to think about. Like I'm not quite sure,
right?
You know, if there's anything to do about that, or you know, or I mean, I don't know.
Was Joel being an angel, or was he in inner circle at the time?
At that time, he was inner circle.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, exactly.
So he was wanting to take over the transaction and have the transaction happen between the two of them.
And in that, he was definitely leading the game at that time. But I mean, because so now he's like now has his perceptions are now outside of his inner world, and they're out on the players of the game, except only one player across from him.
Right.
And he's not able to see me.
Okay.
So, like...
Which is that very intermediate sort of skill running of the game itself, is not having access to the lunatic fringe, not being aware of your angels. Not,
exactly. You know, it was great. It was great for him to at least be working that angle and practicing it and seeing Jim fully.
Right.
And he was. He was looking at Jim and helping Jim.
Great.
So
that is a good advancement for him.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really, really a powerful move.
Without a doubt, he sped up the game. Doubt about it. I mean, categorically.
Great.
Categorically. Cool. Okay, but so that's the game.
Nice
anything
game.
Else?
Okay. Nope. Okay. Nice game.
But, I mean, so here's the other funny thing about that game.
So I played Arabic, What Is That, for them. I was like, now you've played. Now you're going to discover how you already know Arabic.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And I played, and they're like, whoa. And actually, the audio wasn't that loud, so... Uh-huh. It didn't have the impact I wanted. I could tell they couldn't really hear it.
Right.
So then I was like, oh, I had Squamish, What Is That, queued up. But I'd mislabeled the file. It was Squamish One Half Give Take.
Oh.
So I play it, and it goes, and I edit it, so it goes right into frickin' Craigslist and right into a sentence. So I'm like,
whoa.
Yo, okay. And then I look at them, and they're like, whoa. Like, they all were up to speed. They were like, no way. Yeah, and I was like, oh, Slate, Sade, Sashay, Peyton. They were, like, doing it with me.
Nice.
Like, half of them. The other half were like, no.
Kind of dazed and didn't know.
Yeah, so it was like, I was like, whoa, if you do What Is That in one language,
mm-hmm.
and then you skip to something way more complex just to show, but not outside the sign game.
No, right.
But
right,
still, right. But so, they're like, they keep up. And they go, no way.
Very interesting, then, with that in mind. Like, mm-hmm. maybe for a compilation move at some point would be a... Squamish, What Is That, you know, Arabic, Mine Yours, you know, Gaelic, Want Have, Give Take, and,
yeah,
you know, or, and Chinookwala, you know, Steel on the end of it or something,
yeah,
like that,
yeah.
You know, just like up, 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 so yeah. You can see how you sort of experience a game in like five different languages as you're sort of like falling through the bookends.
Right. Yeah, no, it was cool. They were able to do that.
Huh.
I think is the geek advantage, you know, like they're, and it was funny because I was like,
thinking three steps ahead.
I had a metaphor especially designed for them. So I was like, to help we'll all get there together. Cause I think that actually, that was a very dangerous moment where they could think it was about who was excelling over the others.
Right.
So I was like, okay, we are a Cray supercomputer. Everybody's sitting in these chairs. We are parallel processors working in parallel.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we need to recruit everybody, every processor moment that we can get from everybody to help everybody else.
Nice.
It'll all help us all go faster.
Nice.
We are one unit, right?
Nice.
And it just totally hit home. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally hit home. And
that's a nice metaphor to really hit.
Maybe. For like a geek, yeah, technical.
Well, for any crowd, really. I don't know, maybe not
Rewilders.
Well, the metaphor may have to change.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's part of the specific metaphor. But the metaphor in general is the point.
Right.
So if we had like a tailor fit, you know, metaphor, so we could be like, okay, which crowd we got? Okay, geeks. All right, we are parallel Rewilders.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We are the Gaia consciousness. I don't know.
What?
Cat. So the other funny thing too is I went into this whole, like, they were really tapped at the end of the game, like, whoa, and I could tell, and I was like. It's like, you know, this game is designed to use, like, every single brain cell you have available. Like, this is like, if there's an unrecruited brain cell, I'm hunting it. And I'm going to find it, you know? And if I need to invent a new technique to get to it, I'm going to do that. And so that's why this, you know, and I compare it to, like, what it feels like normally to learn a game.
Mm.
Like a role-playing game, a board game, whatever. And it's normally like, well, look in the rules. You go... No, I go first. Okay.
You get the book.
No, flip. No, you get three of these. I'm sorry. Give me four of those back. Give me those four back. You know, and it's like...
Yeah, I'm kind of hungry. I'll see you guys later.
Yeah, right. You know, I got to go to the bathroom and I'll go back. Just keep playing without me and I'm just going to hit the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, all that garbage and... And I was like, notice in this game, you were involved. There was not a moment where you weren't involved.
Yeah.
Even if your hands were down, your mind was numb, and you were just watching, you were involved.
And there was no book.
Mm-hmm.
This is all...
And they totally got that, so...
Yeah, I think that is sort of the model, is that you instantly are playing.
Yeah.
That's
playing, even from the moment I'm explaining, you're playing.
Yeah, the rules are part of the game.
Yeah.
This subject keeps coming up, so I thought we'd... just kind of hit it. This having a backup plan.
Yeah.
Having a backup location. Setting a date. So having a set time and day for same conversation. So you're having a same conversation because it's the same time and day of the week at the same location, preferably, talking about the same thing over and over again. The big issue that we keep finding is that something's always coming up. And a person's like, yeah, I'm going to start a Where Are Your Keys conversation tonight. Oh, I couldn't start. Because of such and such and such. We're going to do it next week.
Right.
And it's like a diet.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to start tomorrow. So any way that you can arrange it so that you can start then make sure it starts.
Well, you know, let's back up even further.
Okay.
So what is Wear Your Keys? Wear Your Keys is a method for learning, for transmitting language, learning and teaching language in the most, in the fiercest, most difficult, most challenging learning and teaching environments. One 95-year-old lady who could die at any moment, you know, maybe she gets sick, hard of hearing, okay. So, Wear Your Keys was born from that monumentally high-stakes need to address that situation that is unaddressable by an institution or a classroom or, you know, a linguist with a tape recorder and a notebook. I mean, that's going to wear out your fluent fool, your fluent elder, in no time fast, right? So we Wear Your Keys is this funny combination of, like, fierceness of the goal of language hunting and total profound kid gloves with handling the fluent elder, right? So, and handling the players. Like, yeah. So it's weird. Yeah. Are we playful and light or are we hyper technical, ruthless engineers? You know?
Absolutely both.
Yeah. At the same time. You know what I mean? And we are playful and light because it works, you know? Yeah. And it's like, if it's not keeping languages alive, we're not interested, you know? So you just introduced this idea that, you know, part of Wear Your Keys is starting these same conversations, mm-hmm. right? And, about these nightly or like every time you're in the car with this person or every time you go on a walk with them or every time you have tea with them, these specific same conversations, mm-hmm. like starting
set
it.
Events.
Yeah. Setting it up and keeping it alive. Right. Mm-hmm. But getting it started or mm-hmm. keeping it alive is actually as difficult as everybody knows, you know, like starting your exercise routine, or I'm too tired today, mm-hmm. changing your diet. Oh, maybe, oh God, I really could use a muffin. Maybe tomorrow, right, you know, or man, I really should call my mother. I'll call her tomorrow. Yeah. You know, like all the stuff of life. Right.
Yeah.
So Wear Your Keys works, teaches languages so blindingly fast, precisely because it is designed for the highest stakes environments where you don't have those second chances. You know you don't have a second chance. Yeah. And
every conversation interaction is gold.
And could be the last.
Yes.
So you behave as if there is no tomorrow. I mean, that's, of course, the whole Mihai.
Your memory has to be on.
Yeah.
Your any other human recorders that you can put in the room are helpful.
Exactly.
Any other participants that you can get on board with you to come at different angles.
Yeah.
Crucial. You know, this information gathering. Not in a sense of information as far as like tape recordings and video recordings, although fantastic.
Yeah.
Not as important as having those human interactions as just often as possible.
Okay, so the author Mihai Csikszentmihalyi wrote this book called Flow. It was all about, you know, what is this experience or this mindset that we get into, which is like this peak experience, which allows people to do these amazing things and have like the most pleasurable, successful moments of their lives. What allows some people to survive concentration camps and others not, right? And he pinned it all down on this whole idea of flow and these qualities that make up the experience of flow. And I blogged a little bit about this on the Wear Your Keys blog, where Wear Your Keys has those qualities that he's talking about because it's about survival. Right? Mm-hmm. Wear Your Keys is training the players to make sort of a everyday habituated feeling of these absolute razor sharp survival honed abilities. Right? And so within the context of Wear Your Keys, you treat nothing lightly, even though you're playing. You don't treat one person going, I screwed that up. You don't go, oh, well, okay, normally we do how fascinating, but you did it and you get the point. No, you go how fascinating. And if somebody only does how fascinating half as much, I make them go all the way again.
Mm-hmm. How fascinating.
Exactly, arms all the way up and back. Yeah. And that actually happened at the Game Store a couple of times. Like, no, we don't do anything by halves, mm-hmm. you know? And to the extent that we're doing anything by halves, we're dulling the survival edge on the revitalization game, that is where your keys. So where it's like it's absolutely honed, right?
One more point of the Superman 3.
Yeah.
That we're not able to shave.
Exactly. Okay. So Superman 3 is every single possible moment, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, it's the carpe diem, you know? Like, that whole carpe diem of, gosh, I wish I was that guy who sees the day, right? Mm-hmm. Who sees the moment. Well, this, Where Your Keys, is designed to create that around teaching and learning, mm-hmm. where you don't let a single moment go by without sucking the marrow out of it,
right.
Which is why people end games with their brains leaking out their ears.
So what about that, more about keeping that same time and that same conversation going? Well, A, getting that same time and same conversation going, I think, is that first step.
And that's, we end up like, I mean, especially you, like you, so you've been developing, I would say that the techniques that you wield as strongly, and I've said this for a while, mm-hmm. are same conversation, really.
Yeah.
And setup.
Yeah.
Which, you know, right. peeling those apart, but you know, it's hard, but basically you are like a maniac for same conversation. Yes. You'll be like, so-and-so got their legs broken. Well, why aren't we going to the hospital and doing the conversation there? You know?
Yeah. And having a vent about it so we can all talk about that time they got their legs broken.
Yeah. So-and-so's sick. Why don't we?
I have a very good memory, mm-hmm. A. And so, B, I'm using that every memory trick I have and the collective memory to remember conversations that we've had.
Uh-huh.
So I'm always talking about, like, oh, well, Peter wants to talk about baskets.
Yeah.
Now you want to talk about, yes, I was gonna say, you know, other body functions. People's interests are their same conversation. So trying to make sure that we have you know, a collective memory of those. So every time we're having conversations with each other, we get to benefit from those even more specifically.
Right.
So remember that time you broke your legs? We all went to the hospital. Oh, and you're allergic to milk.
Yeah.
Remember that time in the hospital that the nurse tried to give you milk, and we all thought that was funny because that would. Right. You know, they missed that in your your uptake interview or your intake interview.
Yeah.
So all those things kind of bouncing off of each other. So to have that same conversation then,
mm-hmm.
having the added safety and security, which is, you know, some of the basis of all the techniques, is that you're building in redundancy and backups
Absolutely.
For every thing. So if one technique doesn't work out, you have these other 10 to fall back on.
Right.
So you have these every possible harvestable moments.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that we've designed all the techniques in this way also is that, you know, to have these same conversations with people who come in the first day and they're like, teach me, teach me. They sit down, you teach them for an hour, they never come back.
Right.
Happens all the time.
Yeah.
And everybody who's done any kind of language work knows that.
Right.
But now, can you teach in a way that first time when they come, and you know they're not coming back.
Yeah.
So in a year they come back. Well, you can jump right back into the lesson.
Yeah.
And it's like, I get this all the time. People are saying, wow, I remembered everything and I was here a year ago.
Right, exactly.
Well, yes, of course you do. That's
that's
the design point. And imagine what could have happened if they had been coming every day.
But even then, you harvest that fraction of a penny of them showing up. That went in the bank.
It went in the bank. And so to have those times and those set aside spaces, even in people's minds that are there, kind of like, you know, what we do here, you know, the Wednesday night Chinook class.
Right.
People know and have known for the last 3 years that there is a Chinook class happening somewhere in Portland every Wednesday night.
Yeah, right.
And for the last couple of years, it's been every Wednesday night from 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock. Drop in, drop out, come anytime, leave anytime, stay for the amount of time you want, come anytime you can.
Right.
You know, that really then, anytime somebody looks at their watch and says, oh, Wednesday night, what do I do on Wednesday nights? Oh, well, there's Chinook night. No, I don't want to go to that. But they have a memory of it.
Right.
So right then they go, oh, Wednesday nights, Chinook night. Into their mind
goes
the time when we're playing.
And, right,
and they have a memory of it. So at least that island in their mind also triggers a Superman 3 moment where they do a little...
It's a little fraction of a penny.
Fraction. It's a super fraction of a penny.
Mm-hmm.
So to set up that first and initial conversation,
yeah,
is it... You know, is it over dinner where you just go and have dinner with a friend?
Yeah.
Or you bump into them on the street and you have a quick interaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of your same conversation. You know right the conversation that you've left them off at.
Mm-hmm.
You know where they're going to.
Is it walking an elder home from work? You know?
Yeah. You know, and then the next time it's gonna be that same conversation, but it's gonna be the same time, hopefully same day of the week. Day of the week,
yep.
The same location,
yep.
Building all these different same.
Jeez, you if you were get. Wearing the same clothes and yes. the same haircut, oh, even yes. better.
Yes, do it. Oh, if you have that chance.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Really, like, it, it gets insanely OCD.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But it's absolutely true. Right. So the other thing, then, is like, well, then how do you start if you're going to be, you know, if things get canceled?
Right.
So we have this big first day, and I'm actually getting a little bit nervous about the big first days.
Right.
Because I think for some reason, big first days are easy to push off.
Right.
You know, the big inaugural speech, oh, well, that didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, well, no,
so,
good.
So let's,
good.
Let's meet good next point. Week. Well, the big celebration is next week. Oh, man, I've got so much on my plate. Can we push that off? The big celebration?
Yeah.
So what if it's just, at first, just meeting on that same day and time?
Yeah, we're going to meet and we're going to vacuum the room.
Yes. Yes, we're going to meet, shake hands, do a little dance.
Play and, Pictionary or and, I don't know,
right,
something.
Anything,
yeah.
And leave.
Yeah.
Just to get that moment happening. And then when somebody says something like, you know, hey, I had a medical emergency that day.
Right.
I lost both of my legs.
Yeah, right, right.
Well, you know, you aren't the only one that's keeping this language alive.
Right.
Everyone is keeping this language alive.
Right.
So to take that and say, well, I'm the reason that we're not going to have class today.
Right.
Well, next week it's going to be somebody else.
Right,
it's gonna
exactly.
be somebody else's reason, which is going to be perfectly just as valid.
Well, and let's set this part up. So we're working with Dustin Rivers,
mm-hmm.
and he had a fantastic, we did a Squamish conversation orientation night.
Right.
Great attendance.
Yeah. Really kicked their community off.
Oh, it was great. He led a fantastic game.
Yes, he did.
And and this is the strength of the game is that if they show up, man, they're going to come to the next one.
Yeah.
You know, it's just very strong, you right. know? So then now the opportunity is, he was given the opportunity to not only have a language night in his home community, in mm-hmm. his neighborhood, basically, but one farther away from his home community, farther away from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman instrumental towards setting that up got in a car accident, mm-hmm. actually got whiplash, mm-hmm. right? So he got a call from her that said, not only did I get in this car accident, I got whiplash,
right.
but I didn't actually get confirmation on the space.
Right.
So your and my reaction was,
so?
Yeah. Like,
so?
She was an awesome supporter, and who else did you have lined up?
Yeah.
Like, I hope she gets better. Maybe yes. we'll have the class that her, you know, bed yes. said if she'd allow us,
right.
but if not,
right.
whose living room did we have as a backup?
Right.
Because really, it's preferable to have a living room anyway over like some sort of rec hall space.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Date somebody's living room.
So, but that was like our first reaction. And this is absolutely consistent with everybody who encounters where everybody who's living in the modern landscape. Dustin was, you know, his response was, oh, well, but that was just one thing that would happen once. You know, that was kind of
random. Never happen again. We'll never run into this situation again.
Irony.
You and I look at each other and we're like, oh, you'll never run into this
yeah,
again.
Yeah.
Yeah, we never run into this.
Yeah, we look at each other and go, oh my God.
Another one?
Crazy, right? Uh-huh. So today we were going to actually, there's a couple of local Native American folks that are dear friends of ours. And turns out their grandparents speak Chinook, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we were going to make sure that they could make it to a Chinook night, right?
Right.
One of them, her son, had a car accident, got whiplash, canceled.
Yeah.
Okay, these are people, Chinook is dying. I mean, I think it's destiny has turned around at this point, but like in my mindset.
Well, we could all get on a bus.
Right, right, and go over a cliff. Yeah,
that's
right.
It. I mean,
yeah, earthquake.
Really.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Really,
it's
really.
True. But whatever.
Not even a big bus, like the short bus.
Yeah, whatever the math of the situation, though. What even if it changes my mindset is a Wariuki's mindset of
right.
this is do or
yeah,
die.
Absolutely.
So and hearing that, it's like my first response was, do we all need to have Chinook class at the hospital, or you know what?
Right.
You know, and it's like a perfect example of. Not only is this not random, is this not, oh, this will just happen this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's that this is the constant pressure of the modern world and of just the natural chaos of the world that this kind of stuff is going to come up. And if you've got to have backups,
yes.
if you want to speak a language, if you want to revitalize a language, if you want to keep a heritage language alive or share it with friends or family or do anything that really matters, the first step is fiercely guarding a regular conversation.
Yep.
There is nothing that
place
can happen.
And time.
Yeah, there's nothing that can happen that before that.
Right. The house that you have arranged to have your evening, you know, insert language here, your Spanish night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Even if the house is burning down.
Yeah.
Well, you're gonna have your language night in front of the house burning down, and y'all are gonna talk about the firefighters.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're gonna have it there regardless, or you're all gonna pitch
Hayash
in, you know. Hopefully you'll all pitch in and, you know, help out. But that's gonna be something that you can talk about.
Right.
So even having a person, you know, who, you know, it doesn't have their legs. Well, let's prop them up.
Right.
You know, let's sit them in the chair nicely so that, you know, we can, and that's how we're gonna go about really saving a lot of languages is getting over that hump of, I have a lot to do. Yeah. There are mitigating circumstances. Yeah. Yes. People are dying every day, every moment. People are also being born.
Right.
You know? So it's like, oh, I can't come because, you know, my cousin had a baby.
Yeah.
I can't come because my cousin's baby died.
Yeah.
You know, there's a million things that are happening in the world just all the time.
Yeah, when we're transmitting language, not in spite of your people being born and dying, but because of it.
Yes.
Isn't that?
Yes.
with no human life happening, there's no point in speaking language. So that stuff is involved in it, right?
Yeah,
it's not an excuse to cancel, you know?
No. And really the idea that you may not have your language in order to attend a birth or a death ceremony, because you don't have the ability to wield your language in those certain types of ceremonies, really makes it shockingly clear of why an evening shouldn't be canceled.
Right.
To make sure that we have enough languages intact so that ceremonies can be intact, so that we can greet and farewell our community members appropriately.
In our heritage language,
So, you know, until all of those ceremonies are intact with everyone in the room able to speak and participate fully, it's where your keys funeral.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, let's cover the...
That's the same conversation.
Cover the material.
Yeah.
And you certainly have people in a community, and a lot of times these guys who can speak their languages, the last speakers of the languages are ceremony holders.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who are getting, oddly enough,
right, exactly.
In some kind of manner.
There's that technique, money talks.
Money talks, in order to keep these ceremonies alive, because they're important to people.
Right, absolutely.
And interestingly enough, that seems to be the last thing of importance that people are willing to let go of, are these farewell ceremonies.
Right,
or honoring ceremonies or some other kind of ceremony. Yeah. So, okay, well, don't be ashamed of that. Use that to all of its all of its ability.
Yeah.
You know, what a fantastic, really, opportunity that kind of thing is at my funeral. You know, I'm really hoping for a raucous party.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, that people are playing "Where Your Keys" over my grave, exchanging languages while I'm smiling with a, you know, please manipulate my fingers so that I'm like saying something cool.
Your rigor mortis, move your arms around. Taboo in some cultures, but not in Evans,
not
I guess.
In my mind.
So definitely.
Yeah, so I think that so having that and holding that fierce space is really crucial. Now, maybe we should talk a little bit about how to get to that space.
Yeah.
So I think the first thing is just as a single person, who generally this is kind of how this is being geared towards, is like, I want to learn Spanish.
Right. Well,
individual person, I want to learn.
It's kind of like that if not you, who, if not now, when.
Yeah.
So it starts with a single person and their interest.
Right. And then saying, okay, well, I am going to commit 3 hours a week.
Yes.
I'm going to do Monday nights, 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock.
Yes.
So great. So now you, Monday nights, 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock, start setting your same conversations in action.
Yeah.
Get them rolling. So that means, you know, sometime 5 o'clock, go find someone who you can ask, what is that to?
Yeah.
Or actually, no. The first step would be to look at our website from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock.
Yeah, right. and copycat along with the videos.
Copycat with the videos. Next, try and get someone to help you fill in the Universal Speed Curriculum.
Yep.
At least to what is that?
Mm-hmm.
Just that is plenty. Because now you have the tool to walk up to anybody and say, what is that? And you're going to get an answer.
Mm-hmm. 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock.
Find your props.
Mm-hmm.
From 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
The next week. So mm-hmm. this may take a couple weeks.
Yeah, to get, might. To get it might run through your time. That's right. Fine.
And then, you know, eventually you will have at least blocked out that time in your mind where you're habitually finding the next step to learning your language. And you're going to start then bringing along people because they're going to start seeing you every Monday at 5 o'clock. And they're going to go, oh, well, here comes Evan again. It's time for his, he always does his thing at 5 o'clock and somehow he always finds me. So we talk for a minute. Mm-hmm. And so, oh, now you got another person.
Yep.
And so now you're training them to keep that 5 to 8 o'clock slot open because you've just sort of harassed them into, into playing along with you for a little chunk once a week.
Yeah.
And then, you know, more people will come and more people will come. And then the next, and then if you want to announce that you're doing this thing,
mm-hmm.
fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you just end up having a weekly party at your house.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, any other sort of first steps or the next steps there?
Just,
or is the organic process?
I think there is a kind of low-key fierceness. And this is the only word I've ever been able to come up for what we're talking about. There is a kind of, I mean, we're pretty personable guys. You know, we're not holding anybody's feet to the fire.
No.
Right. And there is a certain point though, where somebody has matured enough within the game. They've gotten their full of play and sorry, you know, they're able to protect their learning journey. Mm-hmm. They're able to create a safe space
mm-hmm.
and where it's now like, okay, now it's time for them to learn about how to create a regular space for conversation, that same conversation.
Yeah.
And this is actually the adulthood of their life. They've gone through baby, they've gone through teenager, mm-hmm. and now we're like talking about adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And adults will protect their children with their lives, mm-hmm. right? There's a kind of fierceness that we're talking about that is an adult fierceness in terms of protecting the smallest, most insignificant but incredibly precious things.
Mm-hmm.
Things that it's awfully easy for the boots of culture to stomp on without even noticing. And it's like, so this 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. thing, by starting it, it's like even if you're sitting on a couch twiddling your thumb from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. with, God forbid, a book on Spanish sitting in front of you, you know, or a movie of Spanish playing, whatever, you know, that you do it
and
you protect it with your life.
Yep.
And if the worst should happen and you should be called away, have someone else be there for you
mm-hmm.
and there get someone else to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that when you announce, if you invite friends and start having a party, even if there is some reason where you just cannot make it, mm-hmm. you know, that there's still someone holding that space, that it's the space itself that mm-hmm. is important.
Yeah.
And that what you're protecting, even if you're not there, you've made sure someone else was.
Yeah.
And that the conversation can go on, right? Yeah. So that is why, like, you know, when we hear, like, oh, whiplash, and it's like, oh, absolutely, like, I don't want people hurting themselves in order to...
Right.
However, then what's the backup? You know, like what is as an adult who's fiercely protecting either your heritage or the actual survival of your language itself, you know, but whatever it is, you're protecting something that's worth fighting for, then you're going to have backups, you know, you're going to have backups.
And in your search for backups, you're going to find other players and other interested parties because your backups are going to be the people who are interested enough to provide a backup space and a backup time and a backup location.
Yeah.
And so those are people who are announcing themselves as interested. So in case you don't see that other social cue there, that those are also your biggest cheerleaders and those your members of your choir. And involve them in this process as much as possible. So that if the worst should come to you and you should meet your untimely end, then your last moments on this planet have been to set up a same conversation night.
That's, to revitalize your heritage or a dying language. I mean, you freaking did it. You spent your last moments doing something worth fighting for and worth dying for, you know, worth living for.
Mm.
Okay, so here's the thing. Crisis creates community. It's actually something that I don't think most people understand, and it's probably like one of those things that even in American culture we understood not too long ago, but it's like the ability to put out a entertain people with food at an evening party. Nobody knows how to really make finger food, or, you know, like you were saying your grandma does or used to do and really well. And so, like, people don't really understand that. A whole bunch of, oh, no, I'm doing great. It does, you know, I don't need any help. Yeah, it's great. Let's hang out and not need any help from each other. That doesn't create community. Mm-hmm. Crisis creates community. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't want to get evangelical with where your keys, like, you know, too bad. You know, it's not a religion. But the, and also, if people come into it and they have the full weight of the fact that a language is dying, dropped, and really a lap that is too weak to hold it up yet. Mm. They don't have the strength with the language. Right. They don't have the strength with the game, which is going to give them all the skills to language hunt. Right. So they just feel overwhelmed, which is a very common learning experience, and they're out the door, right?
Because they're the ones who realize, for whatever reason, that this is falling on their shoulders.
Exactly.
It's a scary thing to realize, like, oh, if not me.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. If not me.
Right.
That happens all the time.
So this is like, this is kind of an atomic weapon, that this whole, the adult fierceness of protecting the same conversation. And I don't bring it up unless I think someone's ready for it. And I think Dustin's actually more than ready and has been. Yeah. You know, he's perfectly able to deal with understanding this.
Absolutely.
And it actually helps him work even harder. But I've met many people who this would just crush, crush their spirit, and then oops, we lost one.
Yeah.
And that was an error on our part.
Right.
So, So the thing is as you set the space, this regular space for conversation, you watch who can handle that kind of information. And as soon as you can, you give it to them, but not before.
Right.
You make sure that first and foremost, it's a safe space for children and adults to play together.
Yes.
And then as soon as those people within the, I mean, the, some of the children might be ready before some of the adults. Mm-hmm. As soon as they're ready to accept that on their shoulders, that, all right, sometimes, I, you know, there could be an emergency and I won't be able to make it. Are you going to be able to be standing there when your language drops out of my hands and is going to hit the floor if someone else doesn't catch it? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is, there's an intensity to that, but it's absolutely accurate. Mm-hmm. And so that's another aspect. There's a sorry Charlie possibility in there. Don't sorry Charlie someone's ability to receive that. Make sure the game is strong in them first and their proficiency is high enough.
Or instead of Charlie Charlie with that responsibility of holding the language in their lap when it may not be ready, to offer up the idea, like, look, it may come down to where I can't be here.
Yeah.
And I need you to just be here and have it not be a thing where they have to run the game.
Right.
Just like, hey, can you host
people
coming over and drinking some tea?
At your house.
At your place.
And maybe you go upstairs and take a nap while they're here.
Yeah, you know? just offer up your
space. You know, whatever
so
you need to do.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. It's like the smallest bite-sized piece that they can handle.
Right.
Absolutely.
And even just sort of to point out a small pink elephant that's crept into the room since our conversation started, us recording this and giving this advice is fairly fierce.
Yeah.
It's almost a little bit scary, this kind of kind of fierceness that we're sort of laying on on folks. And, well, now that you've decided to learn a language, you have this. But there is an amount that where that we still want that to happen under the circumstances of play and excitement and learning. And and so take this with some amount of joy that just says that, you know, the fastest way to do this is to set up a same conversation time and location.
Right.
This is the fastest way. Mm-hmm. And in order to make sure that this fastest way happens, create backups to ensure that this can keep happening over and over again.
Yeah. And if that, and if the knowledge, if ever you get reach a point as someone revitalizing a language or trying to transmit a heritage language or do anything in your life that matters and it starts to become too much, start at the beginning, start over. Go back to the easiest, smallest piece.
Yep.
You popped
call
your
full.
Bubble. Yeah, call full. You sorry Charlie'd yourself, right? Take a break. Yeah, take a break. Or go back to the smallest...
drop out to Lunatic Fringe.
Yeah. Go back to the moment where you just say, what is that? In whatever context we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, that you go to that small beginning point and be gentle with yourself. And the regular space for a conversation, you know... maybe it takes some skill building to get there. In the end, it's going to take fierceness, and you'll have to grow into that, though. Mm-hmm. It's not something you can force on people. Mm-hmm. It's, you know.
Yeah, and some people have the bandwidth for it in their lives, and some people don't.
Nope.
So maybe if they have the bandwidth for, you know, coming to a thing on Wednesday nights for 5 minutes, well, wonderful.
Yeah.
Harvest that.
That's a penny. That's a fraction of a penny.
Maybe that's you. You know, maybe you aren't the person in the community who's going to be able to house this at a particular time or a particular day. But if there is someone in your community who's doing that, then make the first baby step by also starting to block out that time during, say, like, let's say that there's a Swahili class in town that's happening every Monday night from 5 to 8. Well, and you're thinking about taking Swahili. Well, just start thinking about that Monday night's 5 to 8 slot as your Swahili night.
Yeah.
Even if you don't actually make it to the Swahili class, at some point, you will knock on the door, say hi, and run away.
Yeah, right.
And your little baby steps nibbling into that. You know, or you want to start running the Swahili, or you want to really go after Swahili, so you arrange to have a Swahili night at your house.
Mm-hmm.
Every Monday from 5 to 8. So there's a range. There's the spectrum of commitment that you can go to. But really, the way in is just setting aside that time and then having backups for that plan.
And there's some people in your life who are incredibly good at holding space and putting out the food and spend quite a while being scared of going back to the learning process and, you know, are scared of learning language or scared... And it's like that, you are so lucky to have that person.
Mm.
You are so lucky to have that person who's willing to hold space for you, willing to clean their house so that you can have, people there make food. And all you have to do is show up and play some games, right? So this is like how we have...
Or show up and have tea.
Yeah.
At the beginning. Just showing up. And
you know?
That community brood. Yeah.
So, everybody plays a critical role, and you may not need to play all the roles. I mean, that's not... what we're saying at all, but that all these pieces are techniques for accelerating the game, and somebody needs to be doing these techniques at some point in order to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the biggest mover and the biggest changer of destinies of languages is that first person who steps up and says, "My house, Monday night, 5 o'clock."
Yeah,
that's when your language changes. That's when your language
That's the moment
into the black.
That's the moment. I just read that article by Ryan Redcorn about how that's essentially what somebody in his community started with the Osage language. And just getting together and talking, even if like talking at the level of 4-year-olds, fine, but they were talking, right? And then at some point, money talks, right? They were given a budget. And people started getting paid because, wow, there's already a language program. Right. And these guys that meet somewhere and just hang out.
In Johnny's living room?
Yeah.
You have a fully vetted language professional gathering night in your community? Oh, why aren't you paying those guys?
Exactly. And so, and this is actually a very successful program. And it actually stands out in the realm of Native American language revitalization programs. And because it's using one of the most profound techniques and is certainly the foundation for Where Are Your Keys, which is same conversation, regular space for conversation. Man, if you just do that, and obviously, I mean that, you know, like everything else, all the techniques are no more than accelerators. So Osage, I'm sure, could be going faster. Where Are Your Keys as we run it could be going faster. It's all a continuum of a dead stop to, you know, infinitely fast, right? So the point is you start in the place of same conversation, and nothing really can happen before that.
So here's some advice that I give to people who for a long time I've been giving this advice to people who said, "Oh, well, I'm going to Italy next week. Help me learn Italian." I said, "All right, I'll give you a free lesson.
Yeah,
this will take about 1 minute to explain." And it's very interesting to see people's reactions to even that sometimes. They're like, "I really want to learn, 1 minute? I don't know.
I have a minute."
that's going to be a lot to get me into Italian just, you know, without effort.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my advice is pick something you like. Let's say orange juice. I like orange juice. So every morning at 8 a.m., you go to the same restaurant in the same place, and you walk through spot on 8 o'clock, say good morning to everybody, or however it works out in that culture. You take the same seat at the same table. Hopefully you get the same waitress, and you order the exact same thing, glass of orange juice. And you do that the entire time you're in Italy. Oh, let's say it gets a little boring because you're there for 6 months. Uh-huh. Okay, well, for the first, couple of days, do that. Go to the same restaurants in the same place. Well, then start going to different restaurants, but go mm-hmm. there at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. And then...
That's called technique minimal deviation.
Minimal deviation. Exactly. So you set the same conversation, and then you minimally deviate that same conversation. Uh-huh. So you walk into one shop, and you get used to people saying, buongiorno, mm-hmm. and then you walk into these other shops, and people say, bon. Or something like that. I'm totally making this up.
Yeah.
So then, but then you realize that there are different ways of greeting.
Yes.
In
different slangs, community. Different neighborhoods with different dialects. Yep.
And so you get the same concept of how to say hello in all these different ways, and you're building your cultural fluency now, and not just your language fluency. Mm-hmm. And then you go and you order the same glass of orange juice.
Yeah.
So people who are going really on a quest for learning language, as part of their like university study or something like that. I say, fine, hire 3 tutors. Hire a breakfast tutor, mm-hmm. a lunch tutor, mm-hmm. and a dinner tutor.
Yeah.
And you go to breakfast with the same tutor at the same time, at the same restaurant, mm-hmm. and the lunch tutor, same time, same places. But all of these are, of course, attached to meals.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's the thing that has the largest impact on us, that we generally do the most often with the most people under the most circumstances. So having that same conversation night, that Monday, this hypothetical Monday, 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock, involve some food.
Yeah.
So, build that in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so have backups.
Have backups.
Have backups for the backups.
And if you can handle it, as if your life depended on it.
Yes.
As if the life of something really, someone really important depended upon it. And you don't really have a tomorrow. You have no guarantee of a tomorrow.
Can we say even one layer scarier?
Hey, let's do it. Stop. Okay, at this point, if you're not ready for the next layer, stop and just... We never said anything. But if you're ready to go up to the next layer of proficiency in this...
Okay, you've had a chance to turn off your radio. Your life does depend on this. Your life, your grandparents' life, your great-great-grandparents' life, that's why they were alive, was to transmit this information to you. And if... you, for whatever reason, 4 or 5 generations down, or your great-great-great-grandkids 4 or 5 generations down, don't have this, then you have, in fact, or your community has, in fact, somehow stunted the intellectual being of yourselves and your community. Hmm. How's that?
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Yeah. So I hope we didn't scare you with all that talk of fierceness. Really, in the end, what drives community learning is play and playing together. So keep that in mind. You've been listening to episode 10 of the Where Are Your Keys podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on March 30th, 2010. Thanks for listening.